Hi everyone, welcome back to English Digest. I'm Pat.
I'm Leah.
So yesterday we read a couple of the Arsène Lupin kind of adventure stories, and they were a lot of fun.
They are a lot of fun. I didn't know anything about Lupin, and I have to say that I definitely am now interested in seeing the Netflix series and see, you know, this character, how they did it, how they adapted him for Netflix, and then maybe I'll get into reading Lupin. But I am still kind of a Sherlock Holmesy person myself.
Yeah. Do you have any of the favorite stories? Any stand out from the Sherlock Holmes collection?
Saying that to you. The funniest thing is I'm terrible with names of stories, but I read a lot of them when I was 14. I read like the whole thing, the Moby Dick size book of everything, and I just remember all the stories were just so intensely interesting, and how he could think ahead, and how he'd see that dust on the corner of the shirt lapel, and would decide, oh, this is that person, and he would test everything for its chemical composition. And this is like really early thought process, right, for CSI sort of things today, to test 100 kinds of dirt to find out whether it was dirt that was from a harbor or dirt that was from the forest or dirt that was from the roadside. I thought that was just really fascinating with Sherlock Holmes.
I'm a huge fan of Sherlock Holmes. I actually grew up listening to him first.
Okay.
The BBC was dramatizing all the stories with the same two actors. They managed to get the entire canon done. And that was, they were being released on the radio when I was growing up.
It's
and
like 40 stories or more.
Yeah. And I heard them, and then I would get them on, I got them on cassette first. Now I got them all on like MP3 digitally.
So what are your favorite titles?
Oh, favorite ones. The Problem of Thor Bridge is really good because it's so smart. Probably a lot of the other original ones. I do like the ones where he's doing a lot of casework, where he's crawling around a scene doing the investigations. Hound of the Baskervilles is great.
Always,
Can't fault that one at all. It's because the longer stories give it a chance to kind of play out a bit.
Right.
And I've even written one myself. I have written.
Nice.
I'll talk about that a bit more when we get into the public domain part of this article.
But, so we should get back to Lupin for a bit first,
yes,
I guess, even though we are both Sherlock Holmes-y folks.
The reason we're talking about Holmes is because Holmes is a huge part of why Lupin got created.
So he was so successful, probably, too.
Exactly. So let's read through day two and find out more.
Arsène Lupin was the creation of French writer Maurice Leblanc, 1864 to 1941. Though Leblanc's novels and other works met with reasonable success, he's generally remembered for Lupin today. Lupin was created for a commission by a magazine editor who wanted something resembling the adventures of popular British characters Sherlock Holmes and A.J. Raffles, another gentleman thief. The arrest of Arsène Lupin was a hit and led to numerous other short stories and novels, guaranteeing Leblanc financial success and lasting fame. Given that Sherlock Holmes was one of the inspirations for Lupin, in particular the latter's intellect and mastery of disguise, it's perhaps no surprise that Holmes appears in multiple Lupin stories. The great detective is the perfect rival for the master thief. At first, Leblanc just included Holmes as a character in his stories. In their first encounter, Lupin steals and then returns Holmes's watch. However, Holmes's creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, evidently didn't appreciate the idea of someone making money off his character. And Leblanc, rather unethically, never actually asked for nor obtained permission to use him. Doyle's attorneys tried to put a stop to things, but Leblanc and his publisher had already promised their readers more confrontations between Lupin and Holmes. To fulfill these promises, they simply modified the detective's name to Herlock Sholmes. English translations of Leblanc's works sometimes use this, or Holmlock Shears. Interestingly, both Lupin and Holmes are now in the public domain, meaning anyone can legally use them in their own stories. Perhaps they will cross swords on the page or on the screen one day.
So we start off learning about who came up with Lupin. Arsène Lupin was the creation of French writer Maurice Leblanc. And then we get 1864 to 1941. That was when he was alive. So we can see there that that puts him, you know, maybe a little bit when he was grown up and become an adult writer. The Sherlock Holmes stories were already out.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts, but it kind of puts him in a similar kind of era.
Yeah, the same general time, which is why I've mentioned the genre of the time, right? Mm. It seems like these detective stories or these gentlemen burglars, as we'll get around to calling him in a bit, gentlemen thieves, were popular for the day. People ate it up. They wanted to read this, right? Mm-hmm. And though LeBlanc's novels and other works met with reasonable success, it means that they were pretty successful. They didn't do too bad.
His non-Lupin work still did okay. He was a professional. Successful. He could make a living.
But he's generally remembered for Lupin today. So most people, if they know of LeBlanc, they know about this particular set of work, which is his Lupin work.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Well, Lupin was created for a commission by a magazine editor who wanted something resembling the adventures of popular British characters Sherlock Holmes and A.J. Raffles, another gentleman thief.
Mm. So a commission is when, in this case, rather than you write a story and you submit it to a publisher to say, hey, here's my story.
Please
what
pick
do
me.
You think?
Please pick me.
It's kind of the other way around. The editor says, look, I want this story and I will pay you this much to write this story. And he's given him the idea. And LeBlanc is like, okay, you're paying me? Great, I'll do it. Because sometimes writers have to be like that. That's what a commission is. It's a paid job that you are given. Like, I want you to create this for me, rather than you trying to get published the other way
like
around.
Like you might have had with some of the great sculptors in history or great painters in history. They might have been commissioned to do a piece.
Hmm. And so the magazine editor wanted something similar to Sherlock Holmes and A.J. Raffles, this gentleman thief. We'll talk about more about what a gentleman thief is tomorrow, but for now, all you need to know is he was a thief, but he was a gentleman. He had good manners, and he did things in a different way. But Holmes and Raffles were these two really popular British characters that were selling a lot of stories over in the UK, in England, and probably would have been translated and sold pretty well in France. So he's like, okay, we need some of that money. Write me some stories like this.
The arrest of Arsène Lupin was a hit and led to numerous other short stories and novels, guaranteeing LeBlanc financial success and lasting fame. So he was commissioned to do this. He was given money to create the story. And when he created the story, it was a hit. Everybody loved it. It was top. And it meant that he got to write more stories. And that guaranteed, it made it absolutely certain. If you guarantee something, you make it definitely certain that LeBlanc was going to be financially successful and he would have lasting fame. People would know about him through the years, not just, you know, for 5 minutes or get your 15 minutes of fleeting fame. He would have lasting fame. He'd be famous for a long time.
Yeah, so he did write other stuff. He wrote different novels, you know, romances, different stuff. But Lupin was what we call his meal ticket.
Mm.
It was how he was going to get a lot of money that would allow him to live as a successful author and be remembered. So, you know, that's kind of every author's dream, to like hit on something that is popular enough that like, okay, I'm sorted now.
Yeah, same with actors, right? I mean, it'd be one thing if you had one really great movie and that would probably do you really well. But if you have like a continuation story that you get to do for many years, you're probably going to make quite a lot of money off of those. Like
all the Marvel
Big Bang
actors.
Theory guys did too. I mean, they were making
the
just
Friends
whole,
actors.
Oh yeah, exactly. They're done just fine, and they have lasting fame.
Mm. So given that Sherlock Holmes was one of the inspirations for Lupin, in particular the latter's intellect and mastery of disguise, it's perhaps no surprise that Holmes appears in multiple Lupin stories. So yeah, Holmes was an inspiration. It was a direct, like, okay, write me something a bit like Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So, okay, what are we going to take from Holmes? We said the latter's, so Lupin's intellect, so Holmes is a very intelligent character, so Lupin is a very intelligent character. He's just working on the wrong side of the law. Instead
right.
of fighting crime.
Right, Schaltzoming.
Yeah.
And then he also has a mastery of disguise. So that means he knows he has a high level of skill in knowing how to disguise himself. Once again, it might be with like theater makeup, which, you know, you might see guys on, who are performing on stage. They need to look different than they would normally. So they use theater makeup to build up their face or build up their nose or make their brows look heavier. Just things that would make him look very different than he would normally look so that he would be disguised. People would walk past him on the street and wouldn't go, Lupin, stop!
I will say, if you're theater makeup, it would not be a very good disguise in real life because of how thick and heavy that stuff is.
Yeah, but it always seems to work in detective stories, doesn't it?
Yeah. The reason is when you're in the theater, you need people at the back of the audience to be able to see as
True.
Well, so you make it obvious.
It needs to be very, very obvious.
And it's got to be thick because it's the lights. The spotlights will wash out your skin color and make you look really pale.
Is that it will also melt your makeup if you don't watch out because the lights were very hot in the old days.
Yeah. I've worn a lot of stage makeup in my life, and like you look in the mirror and you think, I don't look anything like what it is.
So you're a master of disguise.
Well, no, not really, because it looked really obvious. And then someone tells me, like, just stand at the back of the room and look. And like, oh, okay, I see it now. So, and Holmes was, of course, a master of disguise. He would trick Dr. Watson and the police by dressing up as beggars and priests.
Or walking with a limp or, you know, all sorts of things that could be done to really throw people off.
So, but Lupin went further than just kind of borrowing a few ideas. He actually put Sherlock Holmes in multiple Lupin stories. Multiple means it wasn't just one. He did it a bunch of times, many times. And it does kind of make sense why he would do that.
Well, it does from LeBlanc's perspective, but there's a little problem there. So the great detective is the perfect rival for the master thief. So the great detective being Sherlock Holmes is the perfect rival. So a rival here is somebody that you go against and you compete against, and they might rival you in skill. They might compete evenly with you in skill and or technique. So the perfect rival for him would be the master thief Lupin. However, you know, there's a little problem there. At first, LeBlanc just included Holmes as a character in his stories. In their first encounter, Lupin still steals and then returns Holmes's watch. Well, okay.
Kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, it's playful, but...
Yeah, now there's a thing out there, usually on the internet these days, it's called fan fiction, where people take popular characters from TV and movies and they write their own stories about these characters.
Is this going into your story that you are going to mention?
Not quite. Now, that's fanfic, and fanfic is accepted that they're allowed to use characters whose kind of copyright belongs to other people.
Right.
Because they're usually posting it for free to be read for free.
They're not making any money.
LeBlanc wasn't doing that.
No.
He was using Sherlock Holmes to sell more stories. And you can't really do that. That's not ethical.
I mean, you can, but normally you ask if you want to be able to do that. And I don't think that was what was going on here.
Yeah, we'll get into what happened as a result of that in just a moment. Right now, though, we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher.
听众朋友大家好，我是 Anna。 我们昨天带大家看了一个亚森罗平的经典故事，不过今天要来看看这个作者。作者真的很厉害耶。这作者呢是莫里斯·勒布朗 LeBlanc， 他是1864年到1941年的作家。那当时他为什么会创作出亚森·罗平这样的角色呢？其实啊，他是受了杂志编辑的委托创作出来的哦。我们刚刚提到的在第一段第三句这个地方，不过第三句这边呢，其实有一个关系子句的简化。那第一个关系子句是从逗点之后的 who， 我们当然知道这个 who 一定指涉的是逗点前面的 a magazine editor。那关系子句的简化则是在后面 something resembling。这里的 something resembling 可以先左括号哦，右括号则是在句尾这个地方有点长。关系子句的简化是这样子的，就是原本有冠带，那后面的动词直接变成动词 ing。所以即便这是一个过去的事情，还原的话 resembling 变成 that resembled， 其实有过去式。那把关系子句这个冠带的 that 删掉之后，动词就直接变成 ing 就好了。在句子的简化当中，如果动词变成 ing 是 being， 那 being 也会直接被删掉。可是在这边要特别注意哦，还原的冠带是 that， 因为先行词是 something， 像 something 这种不特定的字， something, someone, somewhere， 或者有一些强调字眼，冠带都一定会用 that。 可是在这里呢，第一段我们还要特别看一下第四句，因为第四句啊，它是一个关系子句的简化。这句的意思就是说呢，这个亚森罗平啊，这个角色被创造出来之后，因为是杂志社的编辑啊委托 LeBlanc 来去创造出来这个角色，当时很受欢迎的就是福尔摩斯啊，还有这个 AJ 这个 Raffles 这些冒险故事，所以亚森罗平这个故事的创造之后也是非常的受欢迎，后来就确保 LeBlanc 在财务上的成功跟他长久的名声。那这个文艺呢，其实也是用一个关系子句来做一个表达，像在第一段我们刚刚说第四句这个地方，逗点之后的 guaranteeing 还原应该是 which guaranteed， 这件事情就确保保证了另外一件事。可是会取要特别小心哦，它并不是指它的先行词并不是逗点前面的 novel， 而是逗点前整句话，从句首的 the arrest 一直到 novels 的这个地方。所以有时候我们在逗点之后看到 which 补充说明的关系子句，特别是 which 的时候，有时候要根据文意上去判断一下这个 which 指的是逗点前的某个事物，还是逗点前的整句话。好，那接着我们就来看一下，刚刚我们说过这个作品的起源的灵感来源之一其实就是这个福尔摩斯嘛，所以福尔摩斯这个角色如果会出现在亚森罗平的这个故事当中就不足为奇啦，这个很正常嘛。那既然这个不足为奇在中文会这么说，英文有没有相应对的句型呢？有耶，在第二段的地方，第二段的第一句这个地方，第一句啊，除了前面的 given that 要把它特别框起来之外，因为 given that 其实就是 if 啊，它有一点点表示条件的意思，不过通常我们会翻成考虑到有鉴于什么什么。那另外一个逗点之后的 It's no surprise that 这边要特别画起来啊，某件事情也没什么好惊讶的，不足为奇啊。英文中文的不足为奇在英文可以说 It's no surprise that， 当然在这边插入了一个副词 perhaps， 或许怎样就不足为奇啦。什么是不足为奇呢？如果当时这些角色这些故事都这么样的受欢迎的话，在亚森罗平的故事当中会出现福尔摩斯，这件事情就不足为奇咯。
We're going to take a short break, then we'll be right back with part two of our article. Welcome back, everyone. So we found thatLeBlanc, who created Lupin, didn't just borrow a few ideas from the Sherlock Holmes character, he put Sherlock Holmes in his stories.
Yeah, no, why not?
Yeah, I mean, if people are paying to read Sherlock Holmes, they'll pay to read this one too.
Yeah,
it's
popular.
Yeah,
I mean, he shows up in France. They'll check it like out. It.
I mean, he does go to France in some of the original Holmes stories.
True.
So, you know, why not? Especially because it would make for great competition. The smartest detective against the smartest thief.
Dun, dun, dun.
But you're not really supposed to just take other people's characters.
And without asking, which is what happened here.
And that's called like plagiarism and copyright theft.
Right. So, however, Holmes's creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, evidently didn't appreciate the idea of someone making money off his character.
Yeah.
And LeBlanc rather unethically, as you mentioned before, with no ethics involved here, never actually asked for nor obtained permission to use him, to use Sherlock Holmes.
Mm. Now, you can do like a legal agreement. Like at the moment, you guys may know this about Spider-Man. Spider-Man belongs to, I believe it's Sony.
Is it Sony?
As for movies.
Okay.
For movies, I think it's Sony, but it could be somebody else. But somebody, not Marvel.
Right.
Marvel doesn't own Spider-Man for movies.
But they're borrowing him for the multiverse and everything.
They made an agreement to use him in a bunch of the Marvel group films.
Which works well for Tom Holland.
Yeah, and they make a legal agreement. So Sony gets money, Marvel gets money. But every time they want to use Spider-Man, they have to make another contract.
And that works with music, too. Like, for example, if you sample another musician's music into your music, well, that's okay as long as you get the approval of the other musician and you give that musician money when you make money so that, you know, they're like, yeah, you can sample my music into your song, but you need to make sure that I get some money too.
Yeah. Now, maybe Conan Doyle would have gone for it and said, okay, because this a lot of the Lupin stories happen at the time when Conan Doyle wasn't writing Home Stories.
Okay.
We'll talk about that again tomorrow as well. And so maybe he would have been okay with somebody using Holmes.
As long as he had some money.
Yeah. Acknowledge me that it's my character. Pay me some money from your sales.
He did have 5 children.
Yeah.
So he might have been okay with that.
But LeBlanc never asked to use him. He never got permission. The magazine editor never got involved and said, would you mind if we used him in some stories? Here's a contract and here's some money. No. Maybe they just thought they could get away with it because it was in France and the stories were in French. Maybe he'll never know.
Which is kind of unethical, as you were mentioning. It wasn't something that went with morals. You weren't following what was right. You weren't saying, hey, I want to do this. Can I please? You're going, I'm going to do this.
So we then see Doyle's attorneys, his lawyers, his team of legal experts, trying to put a stop to things. So, like, it's called a cease and desist letter.
Right,
like,
exactly.
You must stop using it or we will sue you and get a lot of money for you stealing our character.
That actually happened to Trump a lot when he was out on the campaign trail. And
he was using music, wasn't he?
He was using a lot of songs that he didn't ask people if he could use. So quite a few people were sending out cease and desist orders saying, you can't use this song.
But there was a problem. But LeBlanc and his publisher had already promised their readers more confrontations between Lupin and Holmes. So confrontation is when two people meet and often they would argue or fight or compete. So you know there's going to be, in this case, a battle of wits between the two characters.
And if you think about it, LeBlanc's like, but this is a moneymaker. And LeBlanc's publisher's like, this is a moneymaker.
Yeah.
We got to keep doing it. We got to tell our audiences we're going to keep doing
this. Yeah, Holmes and Lupin will meet again.
They're going to meet again. And well, to fulfill or to satisfy these promises, they simply changed the detective's name to Herlock Sholmes or Sholmes. I'm not sure which one it is.
It's Sholmes, I think.
I like the little accent on the E.
French.
Yes, exactly. So that's what they did so that they could continue to have this back and forth confrontation. And my guess is that the French audience listening to or reading these articles thought that was hilarious, right? They're like, ah, ha, ha, ha. It's still Sherlock Holmes. We all know it, but you know what? Ha, ha. The Brits don't want us to use Sherlock Holmes, but we'll use it anyway.
Yeah, change the name and not even really try hard to change the name.
No.
It's such an obvious name change.
No, yeah.
So, yeah, that
it wasn't
was
a big modification.
Yeah.
Right? It was a small modification.
Yeah, that was how they tried to get around the legal problems of using Sherlock Holmes and actually just going, all right, let's just go Herlock Sholmes. He's a completely different character who just also is a master detective.
Just exactly like Sherlock Holmes, but not the same man at all.
Exactly. And we find English translation of LeBlanc's work sometimes use this, Herlock Sholmes, or Holmlock Shears, which is a little more different. But again, it's pretty obvious what's going on here.
I love this, and I love that this is the way they got around this. Although I have to say, if it were me, if I had been Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, I would have been a little bit incensed. I would have been a bit angry about this because you're not only, you know, taking my character and stealing him, but you're making money off of him and I'm not seeing any of this money. So,
I think it's maybe the case where, like, in the modern day, it would be obvious.
It wouldn't happen.
We couldn't get away with this.
For the most part.
maybe back then the laws were a little freer and, you know, there's a little bit of nationalism involved. And
might not have even been known about until, you know, one or two of the story or the first story had come out and it like there were whispers of it over across the channel, right? The British channel?
The English Channel, yes.
Sorry, there you go. So there were whispers across the English Channel that somewhere over there in France they were writing about Sherlock Holmes and Lupin stories. What's going on here? Well, interestingly, both Lupin and Holmes are now in the public domain, meaning anyone can legally use them in their own stories. So what does it take to become in the public domain? Domain is the area, right? Mm-hmm. The realm, the region. I know for some things, like the Happy Birthday song is definitely in public domain, but like,
I'm not sure if it is
really,
yet.
I thought it was. Is it just coming up now?
It might be.
I thought it was one of those things where after 100 years, I think there's different categories
for music,
for different
stories,
things, right?
Yes.
But after, let's just say after 100 years for a song, then anyone can use it and can earn money from it without having to mention the original writer anymore.
Yeah, the legal copyright expires, right, and the owner of that copyright can no longer kind of sue people and say, stop using this character,
which
this
name.
Which
seems a bit strange, too. Why wouldn't the family get the residuals from it? Like in the movie About a Boy with Hugh Grant, you've got the character of Hugh Grant who lives off of the song I think his dad wrote, a Christmas song his dad wrote.
It takes a long time. I get it, you know, 100 years or more. So I guess they figure at that point it just becomes, and that's the way the law works.
Public
domain. Yeah, copyright doesn't. Now, I guess maybe, and there is, and what companies do then is instead of just like getting the literary estate, like we'll talk about tomorrow, instead of just making money off it, they then give their approval to people to write the officially approved Sherlock Holmes stories.
That makes sense, too.
Yeah.
That way they still have some say in it, and they probably also get
money from
it.
Exactly. So, yeah, Lupin and Holmes are now in the public domain, meaning anyone can legally use them in their own stories. That's why I was able to write a Sherlock Holmes story, get it published
by a company
in the States, a small indie publisher in the States.
Right.
So I am a published author of a Sherlock Holmes story.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
But I'm not getting in legal trouble for using that character
because it's public domain.
And a lot of older characters from that far back are now public domain. And,
right.
And it's okay to write and publish story. I have to say, I didn't make any money. It was a free publication.
We gotta get you out there on Amazon and see if everybody can buy your Audible version.
I'm out there on Amazon. You can find me in the 20-odd stories I've had published out there.
Fun to go look for.
Yeah.
Perhaps they will cross swords on the page or on the screen one day. So we talked about these two characters, right? We have Lupin and Sherlock Holmes, and they're in public domain. So it means that we could easily have a story written or a movie made that would be on the screen, right, where they cross swords. So this is a fun one, right? You think about like the Three Musketeers, and they're out there and they're fighting for good and against evil and for good. And what do? Well, they fought with their swords, right? So if you cross swords, it means you
have
meet
a sword
head
fight,
to head.
Yeah.
But also here, it's kind of like you're meeting face to face or meeting head to head and going into full competition.
Yeah, it's that word confrontation that we
right.
covered earlier. It's like they are trying to beat each other in some way. So we'll come back to Lupin tomorrow and talk a bit more about the character archetype of a gentleman thief and some other issues that kind of make we'll look at how LeBlanc's character got stolen in the same way that he stole Holmes.
Yes.
So what goes around comes around. But first, we'll go to our Chinese teacher.
可是哦，有一个问题就来了。福尔摩斯的作者啊，柯南道尔爵士不太喜欢别人用他创作的角色来赚钱呢。而且关键是 LeBlanc， 也就是亚森罗平的作者，其实他从来没有真正的寻求获得道尔爵士给他的一个使用许可，所以这个才是真正的问题啊。第二段的第四句这边我们要特别抓出来看一下。首先第一个重点就是这里有一个 someone 后面带的一个简化的关系子句，当然先行词是 someone 了吼，后面的 making 一直到逗点的 character 可以先左右挂号。这里的 making 还原我们刚刚说先行词如果是 someone, something, somewhere 这种不特定的冠带都会用 that， 那这边是过去的事情嘛，所以这个 make 呢 make money 应该用 made M-A-D-E 作为还原。然后第二个重点啊，就在于逗点之后 never 跟 nor 这两个地方把它抓出来。关键是在后面的 nor 也不如何如何，它不怎么样也不怎么样，要第一个出现一个否定啊。Never actually asked for， 其实 LeBlanc 从来都没有去问过 nor obtained permission to use him， 也没有如何如何。要注意 NOR 在英文当中它是连接词哦，就是也不怎样，这个连接词后面就会直接加上一个动作，所以其实没有真正寻求，也没有曾经真正获得过这样子的事情，那不就是已经侵犯了别人的 copyright 吗？不过好险在现在啊，其实亚森罗平或福尔摩斯都进入了一个 public domain， 它在第二段第七句这个地方，第二段的第七句，第二段的第八句，第二段的第八句中间逗点前面 the public domain， 所谓的进入公共领域的意思就是大家可以用。那所谓的版权呢，一般来说我们都知道创作出来的作品啊，当然也有其他细部的规定，原则上就是50年之后版权就会自动消失，也就是说现在大家都可以使用这些有名的角色在自己的故事当中，而且是合法的哦。不过第二段的第八句要特别注意一下，逗点之后的 meaning 还原是 which means， 而我们刚刚说过，如果这个 meaning 是 which means， 那 which 指的是什么呢？是前面的 public domain 公共领域，还是逗点前面的整句话呢？根据文艺的判断，应该是逗点前面整句话，也就是说不管是亚森罗平还是福尔摩斯，这些故事都已经没有版权，那这样的状况 which means 也就是说大家都可以使用了。不过我们明天还要谈更多有关于亚森罗平的故事，我是安娜，我们明天见。
So that brings us to the end of today's article, a bit about the history of Lupin, his creator, and how he came to be. There's more to say about Lupin and the kind of influence he has had on future publications, but that's a subject for tomorrow. For now, we're going to say goodbye.
Goodbye.